Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
And today we have another lesson from CEDH. CEDH is a metagame within the Commander format that sits at one extreme, with highly consistent, highly efficient decks. Not all cards are equally powerful in all formats, or even in all metagames, but there are lessons to be learned with how people are brewing with the most powerful cards available in the history of Magic. And some of the most broken cards in Magic's history are seen in CEDH. It may come as a bit of a surprise that some of the staples from this metagame are not only affordable, but they can even make powerful additions to less powerful decks. Before we get to that, though, where we start talking about some staples on a budget, we've got a little bit of news to talk about. So this week, we got our first peek at our upcoming sets over the summer. We are going to be seeing both Modern Horizons 2 and a summer set in Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. Guys, which one of these sets should we talk about first?
Let's do Modern Horizons 2 because it is first in our draft outline. I like it.
It's also the first to come out.
All right, so Modern Horizons 2 is going to have some interesting looking stuff in it. We're going to be seeing the return of Retro Borders, is what they're calling it with the old card frame, on, among other things, enemy fetches. So Arid Mesa and that rotation of fetches originally seen in Zendikar. We're going to see Sanctum Prelate and Counterspell printed into Modern. And we got a peek at a new card, Jake.
Yeah, so continuing the trend of printing cards with set names, they are making Urza's Saga, which is an enchantment land with the type Urza's Saga, which makes me laugh very much. Basically, it is an enchantment land, Urza's Saga type, so it is a saga. The first chapter is Urza's Saga gains tap, add colorless. The second chapter is Urza's Saga gains 2 and tap, create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control, commonly known as a construct. And the third chapter is search your library for an artifact card with a mana cost 0 or 1, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle.
So after reading that, I have to guess that chapter 2 is probably your favorite, right, Jake?
I don't know. I think the whole thing works together so very well. This is the kind of card I mentioned a few places that I enjoy seeing humor in cards, and this card has actually made me laugh more than a lot of silver-bordered cards, with the added bonus of it's playable in my decks, and it is actually pretty good. So, yeah, looking forward to playing with this.
It does look pretty sweet. It's just going to be a colorless land that comes into play untapped that also slowly, incidentally, gives you the side grade options to create a construct. And from what you described, it sounds like you do not need to tap the land on the third chapter to get that effect with the tutor?
That's right. So you can actually get two constructs out of it if you tap it for the construct creation and then do the sack trigger. It's interesting because it requires a mana cost 0 or 1. It's not CMC less than 1 or anything like that, so you can't get Arkham's Astrolabe because it costs snow. You can't get any of the artifacts that have no mana cost on them. Mm-hmm. But you can get a Soul Ring, and this will basically just upgrade your mana production. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that looks really cool. I'm excited to see where this set goes. Modern Horizons 1 was a lot of fun to play, and it would be fun to play this one too. But the other set we're going to be seeing is Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, the D&D crossover set. Alex, I'm going to let you take the lead here. What are you most excited to see from this set?
I'm excited to see how far into the lore and story they go into the Forgotten Realms, if they pull from any of the franchise staples, which they are with Tiamat coming through. But I'm kind of just curious to see how they'll work that into a workable CEDH, EDH way of doing things.
Yeah, we're seeing the return of some D&D staple effects. We have a Vorpal Sword, we have a Portable Hole, we have Power Word Kill. It looks like there's going to be a Beholder based on one of the pieces of card art. We have Halfling as a creature type, Alex. I know that is right up your alley.
Just give him a crossbow, make him a rogue. Yeah. It is worth noting, I think Portable Hole, which is an artifact for just one white mana, when Portable Hole enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent an opponent controls with mana value 2 or less until Portable Hole leaves the battlefield. I actually think that's relatively strong.
It is actually really strong. And it's funny because that is like the other use case for Portable Hole. It's supposed to be used just to store stuff, but then you've got the clever adventuring party decides to use it as a portable pit trap.
Well, if you look at our format and consider all of the early turn plays, you know, the Mana Vaults and the Soul Rings, things of that nature, you know, turn one white mana portable hole just kind of removes that. And it's one of those weird effects where it's like you'd have to use a removal spell, something like a Braid, to get rid of it. But it also feels like you're kind of just wasting a spell to remove something that is just a portable hole.
Oh, no, I love the card. I love the card. Just from a flavor standpoint. You know what? No, from a flavor standpoint, I am glad they're educating new players on all the possible options you have with an item that the DM gives you. I think that's excellent.
The question is, are you going to be able, eventually be able to tell a story in cards of what happens to these adventurers? Does that prosperous innkeeper walk through his front door into a portable hole? Who knows?
Poor guy. That's horrible. He probably has kids.
Probably. They're at the bottom of the hole, too.
He does have treasure tokens, and he's green, so it's one of the... I think it's the first green treasure token creation, which is kind of neat.
I'm glad to see treasures just being evergreen in general. I think it is a great mechanic. But we got a little bit more news we got to get onto before we start just going down the portable hole of all the D&D stuff we could talk about today. Because we had our first Major League Commander game for week one.
That we did. I think I was the only one that actually got to watch the entire thing. Both of you actually had adult responsibilities to attend to. It turns out that with most Commander games, resolving an early Hall Breacher tends to make a pretty big of a difference on how the game flows.
So during that game, we had a matchup of Timmy T-1000 had home field advantage, which under Major League Commander rules means that this person would have the first seat. Then the other players at the table would roll to determine seating order. Sitting at the number two seat, we had from Into the North, we had Sick Robot playing Cole, the Forge Master, the Boros equipment combo deck. At the third seat, we had Timna and Thrasios Midrange being played by Squirrel Mob. And in the fourth seat, we had High Tide Jace, Vern's Prodigy, being played by Shark. And it was Timmy T-1000 who took down the game with that early Hull Breacher, dropped on turn two with Niv Mizzet Perun Control. And turns out when the control deck gets its control elements online before the other players can even get a foot in the door, well, tell us what happened, Alex.
Yeah, it turned out to be Timmy T-1000 got a good start. He dropped an early Hull Breacher, was able to resolve that at the end of another player, I believe, at the end of Shark's turn getting into play, following up with a Imperial Recruiter to get Dockside Extortionist when coming to play. Taking advantage of what the other players had in place in terms of artifacts, was immediately able to just get a Niv onto the battlefield, and then just the triggers started just going from there. Ultimately, this led to a dig through time resolving, filling up Timmy's hand, and pretty much just kind of locked him into the game at that point. There was a cursory one more round around the table before he finished the game off with Curiosity and Niv-Mizzet.
I caught the second half of the game. I was unfortunately busy earlier in the evening with aforementioned responsibilities, but I was glad I got to see the second half of the game, even if it mostly appeared to just be Timmy just building towards his eventual win. Still, really happy to see that this has started and looking forward. We're going to be releasing this episode. You'll be hearing it on Wednesday, and then on Friday will be the next set of games, and we should have a whole day of games on Saturday to enjoy. So keep following. It's going to be exciting this season.
And if you did miss the game, the replay is available on the Mind Sculptor's YouTube channel.
And there will be a link in the description.
I don't know. Should we put like a spoiler warning on this one just in case anyone hasn't seen it yet and don't want to know the end of the game?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, and you guys told me all about it, so I think everybody else has to suffer.
Oh, and that's fair.
Agreed.
misery and company.
Speaking of suffering, Alex, why don't we talk a little bit about the game we played last week when we got the gang back together to play in person again?
That's like Alex, a record. It's like 3 weeks in a row we got to play in person, right?
Yeah, it was a pretty good set of games, although I will say the first game absolutely turned into a murder slog of just sitting there doing nothing for about 10 turns.
Fairness, people were doing things. They just weren't really advancing towards other players. Like, you're building a board state, I'm building a board state, but no one's infringing on anyone else. So the game wasn't going anywhere. It was just a stalemate of building board decks, and we ultimately just decided to call the game a four-way draw, and then go on to the next game, which I sat out because I was busy building a new deck for myself, which we'll talk about here in a bit. And then the second game also turned into a pretty large draw, didn't it?
Yep. Lots of draws that game. So I mostly was on my Oketra deck, trying to give our newer players a chance to play with their new decks. We had One of my sisters playing with her mono green Toski deck, and she got to break out some of the new cards, did not get to live the dream of having an Eldrazi Squirrel or a Squirrel backed by Craterhoof, but she did get to see some of her new cards and test those out, which was good.
Now, it's funny you mentioned that, because it's kind of a bit of a segue, but this Friday's FNM Online on Arena was Historic Brawl. And in honor of you, John, and I have a picture of it, I actually built a Oketra Brawl deck, where it's exactly how you would have built it, where let's ramp out the cat, and then just make a bunch of zombie tokens. And it did fairly well. So I thought of you.
I'm glad to hear it. So Jake, did you get to play any games since last we talked?
No, my decks are still all currently packed up in boxes on the side of the room. Hooray!
The only other excitement that I got to enjoy was I got to test out my Malcolm and Kedis deck. It is done being built. I am now working on a polymorph variant of it, and I managed to score 2 wins yesterday at the CDH table. That felt good, so I'm currently working on the primer for it now.
Are you planning to submit this to the CDH decklist database at some point?
I'm going to give a try submitting it. I don't know if it would even make it to the Brewer's Corner, but I will try once I have the primer done.
I believe in you.
Well,
it seems that, like a pretty cool deck. I haven't played against it yet, but I really want to.
Oh, thank you. You did a lot of help with the initial build of the thing, and then you were also pretty helpful at saying, hey, John, why don't you not play this card? Why don't you play a card that actually advances your game plan instead? The sobering realization of having the designated driver of deck building. Well, speaking of building and brewing, Jake, how are your decks going? You're currently working on, I think, both an Extus deck and a Nath deck.
Yeah, they, like everything else fun in my life, have kind of taken a temporary hiatus as responsibilities pile on. But I do have an Extus list in the works, made a couple little tweaks to it. And for the Nath deck, excitingly, there is a Nath Discord, and when Coinman picked the deck in the draft, they decided to go through and do some updates on the primer. And yeah, so there's been some more discussion going on in there on getting the deck a little tweaked. And I know that recently there was a one-hour discussion on Nath that was released on the CEDH Discord on YouTube, I believe. I have queued it up, but have not sat down to watch it. It's on my to-do list.
Awesome. And Alex, you're working on a new deck too. You are working on a dragon.
I am. I am working on Galazeth Prismari. Those of you that listened to us since we started, well, shouldn't be a surprise to any of you that I prefer my creature-based strategies. One point in time, one of the videos, Jake and John challenged me to build a deck that wins on the stack and not on the battlefield. Finally getting around to doing that. I have my dragon. The list is about 90% complete. I'm just kind of working out whether or not I want to do extra turns or just more card draw or redundancy. I don't know. But it's getting there. And there are no mana dorks, so that's something. That's promise fulfilled, right?
I'm looking forward to seeing this one in action, personally.
I just like it. It keeps the token strategy alive. Tons of tokens. And they're all treasure. They're all treasure tokens.
They're all shiny. Exactly. It's everything you could possibly want.
I mean, it's dragons, it's treasure. I feel that this works.
And that brings us to our next topic. Today we're going to be talking about some staple cards from the CDH metagame, which are available surprisingly cheaply for anyone to pick up. And we're going to try to use this as an opportunity to discuss some cards that are very powerful in CDH that we think will be powerful at regular tables as well. Our rule is all the cards on the list at the time of recording this episode, all of these cards cost $5 or less. And we're going to break it up and we're going to talk about creatures. Then we're going to talk about instants and sorceries. And then we're going to pick our favorite from non-creature permanents, artifacts, enchantments, planeswalkers, and lands. All of these are coming from a Moxfield list of CEDH staples. Jake, who is that being managed by?
This list is curated by Null Mage on Moxfield. You can just search for CEDH staple cards. We will also include a link to it in the description. It looks like at the time of recording, it was updated 2 hours ago, so this is something that constantly gets updated. This pulls off the decklist database, and they go through that big list and curate it to a list of currently 202 cards that are seen across a certain percentage of decks, and they get added in here.
And we're going to start out by talking about the creatures that we think are interesting to discuss that we would like new players to be more aware of and can be obtained affordably. Something that is a bit of a rarity in Magic these days. So I'll get us started, and I'm going to talk about Notion Thief. Notion Thief is a card that I really enjoy. This is a human rogue for 2, blue, black, so in Dimir colors. This is a 3-1 with flash. If an opponent would draw a card, except the first one they draw in each of their draw steps, instead, that player skips that draw, and you draw a card. So it is a replacement effect to come in and steal other people's cards. This is a powerful addition to my Opus Thief deck, a card that I still love, and I think it is still useful outside of Opus Thief decks. At a relatively low cost of 4 mana, it provides a powerful impact on a game where one of the most powerful things you can do is draw additional cards. You can wait to just play gotcha on somebody if you expect them to be playing a draw spell or triggering a lot of draw effects off of a commander like Korvald. This could be a really powerful addition to any deck that is including blue and black. It is affordable at only $1.64 as of the time that we are recording this in US dollars. And I just really like this card.
It's very powerful. It has a lot of flexibility. You can use it as a punisher for other players being greedy, or you can be proactive and do lots of symmetric draw effects and wind up profiting off of those. Yeah, I like it.
Having been on the opposite end of an Ocean Thief plenty of times, I can definitely say it is a powerful card with a powerful effect.
What is our next card that we're going to talk about, Jake?
I'm going to talk about Simeon Spirit Guide. It is a red ape spirit for 2 generic and a red, a 2/2. And the text it has is, exile Simeon Spirit Guide from your hand, add red. This is a color-shifted version of the Elvish Spirit Guide originally printed in Alliance, which is the exact same text but green. One of the large differences of note is that Elvish Spirit Guide is like $17, and Simeon Spirit Guide is about a quarter right now, so 25 cents. This is just some really cheap ramp, so if you have any kind of offensive strategy where you just need to hit that critical mass of mana in one turn, this is a card that is mana positive, so you will actually gain mana the turn that you deploy it, unlike a substantial number of mana rocks or mana dorks. So if you have any method of like mass card draw and get this into your hand, it will help you fuel the rest of the cards that you drew that turn.
It's a powerful little ritual. It is essentially 0 mana going down a card, and you get an additional red mana. Not every deck needs to be running rituals. You can see our episode from last week where we talked about how to ramp responsibly, and that might give you a little bit more guidance, but I really love Simeon Spirit Guide, and I'm glad to see that it is an affordable card.
I'm a big fan of it, too. It's done a lot of work in Winota for me when I've been working on trying to get a Winota out relatively early. Simeon Spirit Guide has never been a dead card in hand for me, at least in my experience of playing with it.
Now, there is a way you can make a lot of dead cards very quickly, isn't there, Alex?
There absolutely is. This brings us to my card. I'm probably going to butcher the name on this, but it is a Collector Ophi. Ophi or Oof, however it is you want to pronounce it. It is a 2/2 for 2, 1 and a green creature, Ophi. Activated abilities of artifacts can't be activated. This is an incredibly powerful effect, especially if you yourselves are running mana dorks, things like Llanowar Elves, Elvish Mystic, Findhorn Elves to kind of move ahead in your game plan. But your opponents are based off of artifact ramp, so this completely shuts them down. Now, at $3.61, it is a great alternative to its counter, which is Null Rod, it itself being an artifact for also 2 mana, that is currently running around $50. And to add kind of icing on the cake, this card did come out of the first Modern Horizons set, so there were definitely some sleepers in it when the set came out. I was still running Bloodpot at the time, and it was a huge addition for me. I guess just the chef's kiss on this is the flavor text saying that he steals power from the treasure after treasure, and what does it do for the Oofy? Nothing. And that's kind of what it does. You've got this Oof, it does nothing for you, but it keeps your opponents from playing their artifacts. Or using them, I should say.
Yeah, I love Collector Oof. It is a strong card. It makes your opponents say Oof when you play Oof, and it's got the pun power, it's got the everything good about it, basically. If you are trying to catch up with your opponents while they are trying to daisy chain ahead with artifact ramp, this is a really good way to put them back in line. It is a good counter if your metagame is starting to see a lot of players ramping out with lots of treasures. So maybe against your Prismari deck, Alex, I might have to slot this in a few times. No, this is a great call, and I think more people should know about it and should have access to it.
Cries and Urza. Yeah.
It shuts down a lot of the mana production from artifacts and also will incidentally hit a couple other value artifact pieces like Sensei's Divining Top. Yeah, So it has a lot of uses. I like it.
I think our general impression then on these creatures is there are a lot of very affordable mana dorks. If you're running green and you're not specifically on a landfall strategy, you're probably doing well if you add cards like Llanowar Elves, Elvish Mystic, Arbor Elves, Findhorn Elves, all very cheap right now. There are also some powerful stacks effects apart from Collector Oof and Notion Thief. Dranith Magistrate and even Mind Sensor both make the list and are both very affordable cards to access. So there are a lot of powerful cards that are cheap to get in the creature category. Do you guys have any other closing thoughts on creatures before we start talking about spells?
It's good Findhorn Elves got reprinted when it did, because prior to its reprinting, it was not one of the affordable mana dorks to have.
No, only printed in Ice Age, and then again in
From the Vault
20.
Yeah. And only one of them actually had art worth looking at.
let's not go after the old magic art. Well, why don't we start talking about spells then? Instants and sorceries. For a format that is kind of defined by cards like Force of Will and Imperial Seal, there are still a lot of very affordable instants and sorceries that cover a wide variety of effects. In general, there's a lot of really great pieces of interaction and tutors to be found on this list of sub-$5 CDH staples that can be had on the cheap. The one that I want to talk about, actually, is Crop Rotation. Crop Rotation is an instant for a single green mana. As an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice a land. Search your library for a land card, put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. This is sweet, it's simple, it will be replacing any one of your lands with a land that is more beneficial to you. You can use this to sacrifice a basic land you may already be stacked up on and go find your other colors that you need to advance your game plan. You can use this to go tutor up a powerful piece of a, utility land, and that might allow you to get ahead, it might get you the evasiveness you need, it might get you removal in the form of something like Blast Zone. Or you can just be that person and sacrifice your forest to go get a Gaia's Cradle, and now you are miles ahead of everybody else. This card kind of does it all, and as you are expanding your collection of real estate and your lands, it is just a nice card to have. It got expensive for a while, and it is weirdly cheap at the moment because it was reprinted in Double Masters as an uncommon.
It's a really flexible card. You can use it as a type of ritual by sacking a land to go get a land that produces more than one mana. You can do some pretty fancy stuff like going off on someone else's turn if you get Emergent Zone that lets all your spells be cast as instants. Yeah, it's very flexible.
When I had my Korvold Landfall deck together, it was a way for me to get a sac trigger out of Korvold, possibly search it for another land like a fetch that would net me another trigger. So in the right decks, it was also a form of getting the lands that you need, but also card draw.
All right, Jake, you've got our next card you want to talk about.
This is Eldritch Evolution, a green sorcery for one generic and two green. As an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice a creature. Search your library for a creature card with the mana value X or less, where X is 2 plus the sacrifice creature's mana value. Put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle, exile Eldritch Evolution. This is a green into play tutor. It is really flexible in that you can turn one of your dorks that has lived past its usefulness into a stacks piece, or potentially some removal for someone else's stacks piece by getting Reclamation Sage. You can turn one of your Llanowar Elves into a Reclamation Sage and pop an artifact or enchantment. You can also use it with your commander. So if you have a key card in your deck that is a creature that costs two more than your commander, you'll be able to constantly tutor for it. There are certain lists that take advantage of this, like Tassiger, who has Delve, so he winds up costing substantially less than his normal 6 printed mana cost. You can very reliably go through and pull out 8 mana cards from your deck that way.
It's a great card. I'm surprised it is still this cheap. I run it in just about all of my green decks that are going to be creature-based, and that tends to be most of my green decks, just, it's green. Galta absolutely runs it. A presumed green-black deck that I'm working on is going to run it. I just love this card. It is so efficient at turning a creature that has a so-so utility at the table at that point in time into something that is going to have significant impact for you. And it only gets better the more creatures you run.
Alrighty, and that brings it to me. So my choice for our instance and sorcery spell section is actually going to be a Braid. It is a 2-mana, 1-red instant that is a modal card. It has choose one. A Braid deals 3 damage to target creature or destroy target artifact at instant speed. So this is one of those very powerful effects where if you're able to, if you're behind, if an opponent is resolving things like a Hull Breacher or a Mana Dorks, and you want to even the field a bit, get rid of that Hull Breacher, get rid of that Craven Mind Sensor, things of that nature, you can abrade them away, and that will take care of it. Alternatively, if you have an artifact that's jamming you up, a Graf Digger's Cage, a Null Rod that might be in play, abrade will remove it as well. So it's an incredibly efficient modular card that evolves to fit your needs at the time. Being aggressively costed, at instant speed, it fits everything that a card like this would want to do.
I really, really love Abrade, and I really love that it is still a very affordable card. Abrade just does so much where, even at 1 mana with some of the most efficient printings they've ever had, with things like Lightning Bolt and Smelt, they still just don't match the fact that both of those are printed on a single card. There is almost never an instance where a Braid is a dead card in your hand, and it having that instant speed is absolutely the icing on the cake that just makes it perfect.
Its flexibility and low mana cost are just key here, and that actually is something that I want to talk about with this list that we put together of all the budget cards in these instants and sorceries. There are a lot of answers on here. Lots of interaction of various types, either counterspells or removal or bounce. And I believe that one of the easiest ways to increase a deck's power level is to just include more interaction so that you're not playing solitaire magic. You're actually interacting with other people's game plans and trying to prevent them from winning so that you can do your thing. And a lot of these cards are 1 mana removal or 1 mana counters, 2 mana counters, and they are all under a dollar. It's a couple of them go up to like, $3-4. But it's very easy to include these into a deck list, which will help you be more relevant at higher power level tables.
Absolutely. Some of them have a little bit of a learning curve. Like, once you learn just how good silence is, it's hard to overstate, well, just how good silence is, but there's just so much good interaction to be had at such cheap costs. There is a lot of really good stuff here. I'm with you 110%, Jake.
Like we were talking about the flexibility of a Braid, you can get similar flexibility with Nature's Claim. It destroys an artifact or enchantment for 1 green mana. There's a variety of cheap counter spells that are a little more restrictive than vanilla counter spell, but they're still very flexible. They can hit a lot of things on the stack. So yeah, I think it'd be worth checking out this list and seeing if you can squeeze a couple of these into your decks.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Should we then move on to our non-creature permanents? This will include artifacts, enchantments, planeswalkers, and lands that are all sub $5.
John, that's a lot of categories. Why are these all lumped together?
Well, have you seen the price of real estate right now?
Oh, trust me. Yes, I have. Yeah, so we did lump all these together because there are not quite as many on this list that are under $5, but there are still a few worth talking about.
Yeah, and one of the general themes is that there are still really good and really available mana rocks. One of the reasons we didn't want to talk just about artifacts is that most of them are going to include the cycle of 2-color talismans, which was completed in Modern Horizons 1 with the enemy-colored talismans, Arcane Signet, and then the Guild Signets that were originally printed in the original Ravnica block. Felwar Stone also just barely makes it onto this list. These Signets, Talismans, these 2-mana rocks are widely available, they are cheap to obtain, and they are really good to be able to run. But we want to pick some other things off this list that had a little bit more interesting things to talk about. And I'm going to talk about one of the lands that cost less than $5, and the card that I'm going to talk about is Spire of Industry. This is a non-basic land which enters the battlefield untapped. It taps for a colorless mana, or you can tap, pay 1 life, and add 1 mana of any color. You can only activate this if you control an artifact. Spire of Industry does a really good impression of much more expensive lands like City of Brass or Mana Confluence. It is much more easily obtainable, having been printed recently in Aether Revolt, and having a low, low price tag compared to Mana Confluence. This one only costs $1.42. If you are running a deck that is going to be reliant on artifact-based ramp, or especially if your deck is going to have a very heavy artifact theme to it, this is a really good way to diversify your mana base. And you don't need to worry about having a land that is just dead on the turns when you don't control an artifact, because it can still tap for colorless mana to get you those artifacts out.
That brings me to me, which is I'm going to be going with Wild Growth. It is a 1-mana enchantment for green. Enchant land. Whenever enchanted land is tapped for mana, its controller adds an additional green. It's the equivalent of having a mana dork that you can bring into play, but doesn't have the same vulnerability that a dork would have. You know, you play a land War Elves, a Finhorn Elves, and then immediately gets abraded. Wild Growth kind of dodges those effects, so it can't be abraded out of play, it can't be destroyed by normal run-of-the-mill effects, as enchantments within CDH are a bit harder to remove than artifacts or creatures are. So it nets you the same positive experience that a mana dork would, but in the form of an enchantment for the same price.
Wild Growth is nice because it is that one mana play, it is simple, it is going to get you plenty of extra mana, and really the only way to remove it is with enchantment removal.
And it's only a little bit over a quarter.
Yep, exactly. Jake, we got one more card on our list that we're going to talk about today.
All right, I'm going to touch on Animate Dead, and just for fun, I'm going to read the original card text from Alpha. Animate Dead is an enchant dead creature for one generic and a black. And it reads, any creature in either player's graveyard comes into play on your side with -1 to its original power. If this enchantment is removed, or at the end of game, target creature is returned to its owner's graveyard. Target creature may be killed as normal. Just so you know that you can still kill the dead things. The current Oracle text is a little more wordy, but you know it's functionally the same thing. So I wanted to highlight this because it has a lot of flexibility. You can use it to cheat out big creature from your own graveyard. You can also use it to steal creatures from other people's graveyards if they are trying to do some kind of value with their own stuff. Reanimating someone else's win condition and holding it hostage on your side of the board and taking advantage of it is always really fun to do, and not so much fun for other people to have to deal with.
It's a powerful card. It is a cheap way to get a creature out of the graveyard with very minimal downside. Yeah, it's a little bit more vulnerable to removal than having just a reanimate effect, but it doesn't carry all those same downsides. And frankly, the -1 power is rarely going to be relevant for what you are doing with it. That'll bring us to our honorable mentions, cards that are not strictly on the CDH staples list, but cards that we think are still really good and probably deserve to be played in more decks in general. Jake, why don't you take it away?
All right, so I wanted to highlight Everflowing Chalice. It is another mana rock. This one costs 0. It's an artifact. It has multi-kicker 2, which means you can pay 2 mana any number of times as you cast it. And it enters the battlefield with a charge counter on it for each time it was kicked. It has the ability to tap and add colorless for each charge counter on Everflowing Chalice. This is currently about $1. I think it's 99 cents for one of these printings. It has there's a threshold that I like to have of mana rocks that cost 2 or less that produce at least 1. And this scales upwards into the late game, so if you wind up drawing it late, you can always dump some extra mana into it and have a very big, flexible, colorless, gilded lotus type of effect. You can also just play it on 2 to get a decent rate mana rock. And then there's rarely, but occasionally, situations where just playing it for 0 to up your storm count or to get something in play that you can sacrifice is a useful play.
It's one that's honestly fallen out of my rotation, but I don't really have a reason why it has. So, Jake, thanks for reminding me this card was still a thing.
Yeah, I generally only have it in like monocolor or maybe 2-color decks that don't have a decent amount of dork access or something along those lines. But and once you get into like 3-color decks, you're going to have access to, what is it, like 6 signets and 6 talismans, and you don't really need these subpar ones. But for 1-color decks, it's pretty helpful.
Absolutely. Alex, what is the card that's going to be your honorable mention?
My honorable mention is actually a new one out of Strixhaven. It is Solve the Equation. It is a sorcery for 3, 2 and a blue, and it says, search library for an instant or sorcery card, reveal it, and put it into your hand, and then shuffle. So it is a tutor effect that is a bit more costed than things like Demonic Tutor, Imperial, things of that nature, but it's at a decent price point. It'll let you get any instant or sorcery from your deck into your hand, so you can immediately turn and play it. So it is good early game if someone doesn't really want to waste a spell counting you then, but also late game where you can search for what you're looking for and then immediately turn around and cast it. And at its current price point, I think it's a bargain.
I really hope we see more effects like this. I would like to see additional tutors, particularly at that 3 mana cost, if they are limited tutors like that, especially for instants and sorceries, just because I'm building an Izzet deck right now and trying to tune it, and having a few more tutors to get my win conditions would be great. I will take the last card on our honorable mentions list, formerly on the CDH staples list, and that is Grafdigger's Cage, a 1 mana artifact which reads, creature cards in graveyards and libraries can't enter the battlefield, and players can't cast spells from graveyards or libraries. This is a powerful stacks piece at a very low cost that shuts down a lot of the most powerful things you can be doing in Magic. It shuts down ways that you're going to be tutoring creatures from people's libraries onto the battlefield. We talked about Elder's Evolution earlier with that. This card saw a lot of play in CDH as it shut down a lot of Protean Hulk-based strategies because it would be tutoring creatures out of the library into play. Well, it put a stop to that. It also incidentally stopped Reanimator strategies from taking over as well, knocking a lot of powerful Reanimator decks essentially out of the format. And it also incidentally stops people from using Flashback off of cards like Snapcaster Mage or the flipped version of Jace Vryn's Prodigy. It also stops Underworld Breach altogether. All of these are some of the most powerful effects you can be doing in Magic in general, and Grafdigger's Cage stops all of them for a single mana, and it is dirt cheap right now thanks to its reprint.
This is definitely one of those cards where if it does not directly impact your deck, it is a very low price to include in your own deck to hose a bunch of other people very easily.
So we unfortunately are now sans Jake. He has responsibilities to take care of. So Alex, it's up to you and me to kind of close this episode out. So what are your thoughts overall on the state of paying for Magic?
You know, I'm one of the rare ones where we played in a shop where they allowed proxies to a degree, and I was all for it at the time. And then as I started investing a bit more in the game and not having to proxy as much, it kind of felt good. So I was like, you know, I don't particularly like proxying. If I can avoid it, I'd almost always run a different effect as compared to having to proxy a card. That's just me. But I recognize that there is a much higher need for it now, given that a lot of the staples that exist in our formats are just getting astronomically expensive.
I listened to a really good episode of Into the North recently, where they had the Hermit Druid on, and he was talking about his personal philosophy of he also prefers to own all of the cards that he has in his decks. The only exception so far is Time Twister. And yeah, I'm with you on that one. So his overarching message, though, is don't you dare feel like you need to hold yourself to that standard for me. This is the obsessive compulsive thing that I need to do to make my enjoyment as good as it can be for me, for my decks. You, please, I do not want to play a wallet measuring contest against my opponents. I want to play good games of Magic. And I will echo that and say, if you are playing against me at any Magic Fest, any event, anything fun that we are doing, please proxy anything and everything you need to make your deck what you want it to be.
And this is only a for me thing. And I think there could be concessions made for things that are pseudo power part of the nine, where like Time Twister is a good one for that. But yes, I personally have nothing against anybody else proxying for them to have fun and enjoy this game, which is ultimately what it's all about.
Absolutely. And it's just like right now with the pandemic, the supply chain is interrupted. There's no Magic Fest where vendors are buying cards at relatively inexpensive prices for them in relatively large amounts. So with that supply chain interrupted, you're seeing choke points on cards that are in high demand skyrocketing in prices. Looking at cards from 2020, look at Throne of Eldraine cards. I don't even want to look at the price of something like the Great Henge, but it is out of control at the moment. If someone says, I want my deck to have the Great Henge, but I can't afford it, I don't care that the card was printed within the last 2 years. Proxy that thing.
Definitely.
So I think, in general, we are going to come out as being 110% proxy, proxy, proxy. We want to see more good games of Magic overall. I am going to have more fun if I see more unique decks out there that are dipping into proxies to make their decks work than for somebody to say, oh, I can't build the deck I want because I can't afford to buy X card.
Definitely.
Well, I think with our rant out of the way, why don't we get into a hot seat, Alex? There's only the two of us left, but I do have Jake's notes here on what he wanted to discuss. So our hot seat this time, we have a Forgotten Realms set coming out, which is a D&D set. This is going to replace our core set for the summer. This set features, so far from the previews that we've seen, a lot of tropes and ideas like equipment, like spells, and like creatures from the Forgotten Realms and D&D standards as a whole. We know we're getting a Beholder, we know we're getting Tiamat, one of the most legendary creatures from all of D&D. Alex, what are you most excited to see? Of not even just creatures, anything. What D&D thing are you most excited to see in this set?
It's a toss-up for me between one of two things. Legendary creatures that can be at the head of their own 99 that fit the kind of characteristics that you would come across in a D&D game. So it'd be cool to have, you know, clerics that kind of appeal to you, John, or, you know, just a murder hobo and see, hey, how could this Rakdos-like commander fly into the game? The other half of it is we've got the Vorpal Sword now, which is a relatively... It's a one-mana artifact. Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has Death Touch. For 8 mana, 5 generic and 3 black until end of turn, Vorpal Sword gains whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player. That player loses the game. And the equip is black-black. So I would like to see more equipment that is a bit more specific. Some of the more iconic ones from that series. Like Drizzt's Sword, Twinkle, and Icing Death as equipment. And then have effects associated to them, very simple to the Vorpal Sword. Easy to pay, it has an effect, but if you put more mana into it, then it does something additional. I think it'd be really cool, because it's no stranger to anybody that's listened to us that I have an Akiri deck that I'm quite fond of. So just give me more swords.
I would like to see a return of some powerful equipment as well. That would make me just pretty happy from a design perspective overall. Jake submitted that he wants to see Rust Monsters. They are a weird-looking little creature. They absolutely destroy equipment. So Jake is going to be the fun police for you today, Alex.
Gotcha.
But I agree, they are a cool little monster.
And if they don't make Gwenhvar a vehicle in this set, then I think they're losing a perfect opportunity. Here's a panther statue that turns into an actual panther that you can then ride into battle. It's a vehicle.
Why would that be a vehicle? Why wouldn't that just be a creature?
Because it's not always a creature. It just hangs out as a statue for a while.
Back in the Time Spiral block, they printed that set of artifacts that turned into creatures when you activated them. They did it again with the keystones from one of the Ravnica sets. That might be a better way to handle that.
I kind of just want to see this car. I want to see this vehicle.
I think that if that's the dream you want to have of riding into battle on a panther, you live that dream.
That's all we have.
I am kind of interested in seeing, again, just the cool monsters that come out of D&D. We know we're going to get a Beholder. I want to see more of those aberrations just because there are some weird freaking things in D&D that have never really been translated into Magic just because they are not really fantasy tropes. They are just, well, D&D tropes. Mind Flayers are among them. They're those squid-headed things that, well, they shoot psychic blasts at you and they eat your brains. They're pretty horrifying. We could also see some really weird things like Aboleths would be kind of cool. Be kind of neat to see the Tarrasque make an appearance on there. He would probably have to be legendary. All right. I think that about's going to wrap it up for our episode today. If you want to follow us, we are at GemstoneMineMTG on Twitter. Alex, you joined Twitter again recently. Who are you on Twitter?
I can be reached at @Gemstone_Alex.
Jake, you can find at Necropotency. Our email address is gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com, and you can find us on YouTube where we are Gemstone Mind Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell. Until next time, I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And Jake has already left us. Alex, I'm really sad.
It's okay, we still have Ramos Dragon Engine.
Ramos. You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mind on Twitter at @GemstoneMindMTG, or send us an email at gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mind Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.